Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The arrest of a failed Florida businessman in the assassination of Haiti's president has only deepened the mystery into an already convoluted plot. Christian Emmanuel Sernon is a 62-year-old Haitian who expressed a desire to lead his country in a YouTube video, but it's unclear how much he is involved in the assassination of Jovenel Moïse last Wednesday. Dozens of arrests have been made since the assassination, but the political future of the country remains in question. Well, joining me to talk about this is Dr. Nkongo Ba Nkongo, Caribbean Studies Professor in the Department of Afro-American Studies here at Howard University. We're talking to you as well. What is going on in Haiti? What is the future of this island nation? Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Ba Nkongo, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Good evening.
Let us start with a little Haiti 101, if we can. Even before the assassination of President Moïse, there were questions about his leadership and what was happening in the country. Can you kind of give us the background of what was going on in the months leading up to his assassination?
Well, several commentators have talked about the idea that Mr. Moïse presided over a situation in which there was a significant disgruntlement, that he presided over a divided society, and that, in fact, he had somehow exacerbated that situation. The situation, as we've all come to know it, is in fact that for the last 4 years or so, there's been political wranglings within the land to the extent that those who believe that his term in office should have expired last February certainly were not prepared to accept a continuation of his presidency. It seems to me that that is was a rather weak constitutional argument, to the extent that what he was given was a five-year mandate and that he had been in office for only 4 years. But when one considers that in the last presidential election, there were at least 25 political parties and 25 presidential candidates, then it's clear that there's a certain degree of factionalism, of disunity, political disunity in the land. To complicate the situation, of course, was the fact that the opposition parties were placing all the blame of the economic problems upon the president's shoulder, the economic problems as well as the security problems. So what you had going was a combination of insecurity concerns, a combination of economic concerns and political rivalry, all of which were very much in play over the last 4 years.
But isn't it true, if we can go back, that Haiti's political and economic turmoil, which is for decades certainly been in question, but even more so after the 2010 earthquake?
Well, perhaps one could go beyond that. Look, if you go back to 1986 with the decline or the defeat of the Duvaliers, what we had from 1986 to the present has in fact been a series of administrations that found themselves not being able to gain the trust or approval of better than 70% of the society. In fact, Mr. Moïse, with 55% popular support may have garnered more support than any other person over the last 30 years. What we saw in the period 1986 to now is, in fact, a series of political successions marked at each and every juncture by opposition to whoever was in control. So it's nothing new about the political situation in Haiti. It has been this way for quite some time.
So then why was there so much hubbub now about the economic strife in that country, if it has always been foundational? Did it have anything to do with the pandemic, or was it that President Moïse, some of the discussion was that he was not prepared to leave office constitutionally or otherwise?
Well, these are two different issues. One has to do with his leaving office. Again, one has to understand that he had a five-year term mandate, constitutional mandate for 5 years, of which he served four. He does, in fact, have up until February of 2022. Now, if one wants to say that the election was in 2016 and therefore expired in 2021, then one has to completely discount the fact that for the first year he was not in office. So that is really a sort of a fig leaf argument by those who simply wish to be in power. Secondly, on the economic front, the situation with the World Bank actually forcing Haiti to make some structural adjustments to its economy in order to qualify for better loans and further loans, all of these things had an impact on the economy. We saw that even before Mr. Moïse came into power and right after, the doubling and quadrupling of energy prices. This affected the poor, but in terms of the economic space that the poor occupied in Haiti, that really has not changed significantly. And so this whole business of people in the streets because of the economic situation, people are in the streets, yes, because they are poor, but they are being brought into the streets by disparate elements whose motives are more political than economic.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the situation in Haiti almost 1 week after the assassination of Jovenel Moïse, the president, on last Wednesday. What is happening there now, and what is the future of the island nation? Again, the number 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Doctor, the things have moved rather quickly since the assassination, but I would like to ask you to look into your political crystal ball and tell me, what you think may be behind the assassination of President Moïse. Okay.
Well, much about this assassination has been discussed. It's definitely an unfortunate and sad situation. People want to know, and people ask who, they ask why, they ask how. The motivation itself may not be as intriguing as the means and the ability that people had to do it. And I think in a real sense, the how it was done says to us a lot about and says more than the who and the why.
Why do you
now,
say
we
that?
Can expect, why do I say that?
Yes,
because
sir.
If you consider that there are basically three places that a world leader can find himself or herself losing their lives. Could be in the office, could be in the home, or could be in public. Now, in terms of the office, well, that has to be an inner sanctum and therefore an inside job, because you can't break through security like that. On the streets, you can understand because that's an open environment. At their home, there you have something in common with the office in that you have a presidential guard, people who take an oath to defend with their lives. So in order for anyone to get to the highest office holder and to be able to assassinate that person, you have to begin to think that something is amiss. Something is happening internally. And therefore, you have to look at those who were on the front line of defense and question what role they may or may not have played in this. And so the means of execution here, how they actually got to the president, tells us probably more than the why. And in fact, the how they got to him may explain the why they got to him. That is what I mean by that.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because even by the basic standards of any head of state, as you said, if you are in the office or presidential palace, as it were, in public, yeah, I understand your point. But in the home, in the middle of the night, that certainly smacks of an inside job beyond any consideration.
Well, one would have to say that it doesn't pass what we call the smell test.
Indeed not. Doesn't.
You know, you can, and again, we can speculate as to who would have a motivation. Would it have been internal political enemies, external political enemies, entrenched economic interests, gangs, drugs, you name it. Indeed, it may well have been a marriage of interested parties. But it still comes back to an explanation of how did you get yourself beyond the guard without raising certain questions among the guard that would let you in and let you out?
Yeah.
You see, now, I have no inside information on this, but it seems to me that a reasonable person would have to wonder as to how did you get past that line of defense without raising real questions of concern. But, you know, for me, the discussion of who is responsible may well be, you may be looking here at a fight amongst elephants. And my concern is that when elephants fight, it's the grass below that's being trampled. And so lost in all of this, lost in the nebula of the presidential assassination, is the issue of the Haitian masses themselves. The issue in a nation of 11 million or so people, of the 7+ million who live in abject poverty, because their concerns are not being addressed in this. And I can assure you that the assassination, whichever quarters it came from, was not done with their interests in mind. And wasn't done by them. It wasn't done by them. It wasn't done for them. And it's not going to change life for them.
Indeed. Let me go to the phone lines, Dr. Bongkongo, real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the situation in Haiti nearly a week after the assassination of Haiti's president. Let's go to Larry. Larry calling from Maryland. Larry, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, the president of Haiti, it was a coup. He was assassinated. He was checking into Bill Gates and this pandemic, this virus. That's one. And then you go back to the earthquake with William Jefferson Rockefeller. That's who Bill is, the former president, when him and Hillary defrauded the Haitian people of the billions of dollars with their corruption, with graft and so forth. So this was a combination of both outside and inside. Four were killed, two are inside the Haitian jail, but it was a clandestine, well-orchestrated web of deception and murder, a wet team that was sent to assassinate the president.
So, Larry, let me back you up just a little bit. What proof do you have that the President Moïse was looking into vaccinations and Bill Gates? I mean, I'm not even going to dip into the Bill Clinton piece, at least not right now. But what proof do you have of that?
Nobody wants to about Bill because he's a killer. The doctor, the assassinated leader, he was a businessman, And so he's not the status quo and so forth. So I deal in geostrategic, so forth. I don't go by Mockingbird media or what the mainstream media says. A lot of Americans are naive. We even had a coup here in 1962 with President Kennedy. So it doesn't just happen in Haiti and South America and Africa. It's happened here, and it's continued to happen. So you have outside forces, inside forces. They can easily get a shadow government. Deep state here, shadow government, the puppet masters, the black nobility. They have nothing to do with race, but you find out who the black nobility are that resides from Italy, very powerful people. That's all I got to say, so you can take it from that.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you very much. By the way, President Kennedy was killed in 1963, not 1962. Dr. Bongkongo, your thoughts about what Larry just shared with us?
Well, what I would agree with is that it was well-planned and, for all intents and purposes, well-executed. But I would say this, that the people who are unaffected by the mesmerization of this assassination are actually the Afro-poor masses, the throngs of people who find themselves on the streets of the capital, who are eking out a living as best they can, peddling their goods, sometimes peddling themselves.
Yeah.
The poor folks who live right above Moise in Jalousie and in Sergo, right above the hills there in Pétionville, those people who have no running water, no electricity, have to cook outdoors. They are unaffected by all of this.
And well, so Doctor, hold your point. I've got to take a real quick break, and I want you to finish your point. We are talking about the situation in Haiti, what has happened, what is happening, what will happen. If you have a point of view, if you have a question about it, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, the app. Don't forget to download it to your smartphone. And 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's coming up on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the political future of Haiti in the wake of the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse last week. My guest is Dr. Bongkongo Ba Nkongo, Caribbean Studies Professor in the Department of Afro-American Studies here at Howard University. Lines are open. If you have a comment or a question about the situation in Haiti, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Certainly, you're welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Bongkongo, please continue your point.
In the aftermath of this assassination, we have to ask ourselves who and what is most affected in Haiti. That class of individuals that constitute the 15 to 20% of the well-off of that one part of Haiti as opposed to the other part of Haiti, the remnants of the Euro-Caucasian planter class, slave-owning class, the miscegenated Afro-Saxons, otherwise known as the mulattoes, all of whom own all the hotels and motels in Haiti, the Asian and Middle Eastern business classes. They are the individuals who stand to gain or lose in some fashion by that assassination. But the ordinary Haitians I'm talking about, that's 60%, that's 7 million plus individuals who live in real poverty in places like Gantier, in Anse Peach, in Fonds-Parisien, in Miami, in Léogâne. These individuals, their concerns are not political. Political changes do not translate into economic opportunities for them. It hasn't done so since 1986, perhaps a little bit during the reign of Aristide, but it hasn't really done so recently. I would say that there is nothing in the presidency of Mr. Moïse that really made their lives more difficult. Life became more difficult economically, but it wasn't the doing specifically of Mr. Moïse. And so we have to ask ourselves, how are the basic interests of the Afro masses affected by what happens here? So we have to ask them, what are their needs? They need running water. They need electricity. They need better health care. They need places to educate their children. You see, maybe they can live with the bad roads, but there are certain basics that government should provide that they need. And the problem of Haiti in the last 30 plus years is that government simply has not provided for the masses the basics of life that government should provide. And that, if we want to talk about the failure of government, that is the failure of government that we know in Haiti today and yesterday.
I do want to talk about that, but before we do, I still want to go back to the assassination of Moïse, because as we know, at least to date, there have been some 24 people who've mm-hmm. been arrested. There are several people who have been killed. There has been a great deal of discussion about some of the gunmen claiming to be DEA from the United yeah. States, with mm-hmm. who speak very fluent English.
American English.
Yes, exactly. And so what does that say to you in this hodgepodge of suspects living and dead?
Well, what it tells us is that whatever we may think about the idea that the Cold War is over, whatever we may think about the idea that America no longer thinks of the Caribbean Basin as its backyard, the idea of manifest destiny is alive and well in terms of the unseen machinations and operations of the United States and other major geopolitical players in the affairs of these nations. The fact that, if we take it as true, the fact that someone would announce themselves as DEA agent stand down and the military stands down from a foreign force tells us something. It tells us there's an understanding, explicit or implicit, that the United States has certain powers that it exercises in these societies. You couldn't imagine that someone goes to number 10 Downing Street and says, American DEA stand down and the British police will stand down.
Right.
In France. But it can happen there. And it's because the United States has offices and officers in these places. And so it is conceivable that authority could be accepted and people allow them to go in. And this is not even getting the discussion as to the extent to which they were not fake at all, but were actually real DEA agents, and some of them were. So we have to wonder about the degree to which the United States exercises this super authority over third world states, and exercises that authority in two ways, because it can hold over them the prospect of economic aid or lack thereof, and it certainly still has over them the ability to manipulate the internals of their society by military and non-military means.
So we know that 6 days ago, upon the assassination of Moïse, the border between Haiti and the Dominican Republic was shut down. The DR closed its borders in the wake of the assassination, and you know, concern on that side of the border, obviously a big issue. But on the Haitian side of the border, who is running the country That's the big question. There have been several names that have been tossed around.
Yes.
But interim president Claude Joseph, for
interim
example,
prime minister.
Yeah. So is he now? Is he still prime minister? Is he interim president? Who's running the ship?
Well, again, it speaks to the limitation of autonomy that we have in the African and third world, because what it would appear, without regard to the constitutional line of succession, what it would appear would be that whoever is blessed, at least in the short term, by the United States, that is, who is accepted as the quote-unquote legitimate person right now, is a person who is going to be able to exercise that control. So in this case, it is the prime minister at the time of the assassination, despite what the prime minister in waiting might think, despite what the Senate might decide to do amongst within their own group, besides what civil society, whoever else might think. If the United States accepts for now that the prime minister at the time is the person that is the legitimate person who presides over the government, that is what it is in a de facto sense. And what matters is what happens in a de facto sense as opposed to what happens in a legal, juridical, de jure sense.
Is the Senate operating? Because there's also been reporting that the Senate, as it stands now, its power is limited. It is not in effect.
One third it's only one third of its constitutional size. But what the Senate is going along with, what the Senate is trying to say is that we have a constitution, and this is what the constitution dictates. But in times like these, especially since you have the imposition of a state of siege, ordinary law and order and constitutionality is held at bay, in abeyance, in suspension. And so I think that if what people are looking for is some semblance of stability, then stability is most likely found right at this point in time in a prime minister who is at least as legitimate as anyone else who can claim to be the person who should be in charge.
So if that is the case, if Prime Minister Claude Joseph remains for the time being as the interim president, how long would he be in that position? Would Haiti hold another election? What would happen?
Well, there are two schools of thought on this. The one school of thought is that you go ahead with elections later this year, September, thereabout, and you do elections for the Chamber of Deputies, for the Senate, and for the President. And whoever emerges, that will be the legitimate person to take office in February of next year. There's another school of thought that says, yes, too much uncertainty right now. There's too much insecurity. Things need to settle down. And so you probably maintain a state of siege or some kind of state of emergency for the next 6 months or up to as much as a year. And in that period of time, you may create a caretaker government run by the current prime minister that oversees new elections. And they may even decide to go ahead and keep the referendum that was supposed to go for this fall, a referendum that would significantly change the nature and structure of the Constitution. It seems to me most likely that you will not have an election this fall. It seems to me most likely that world powers, those that matter in this case, meaning France, meaning the United States, meaning Canada, that they would rally around, as they seem to be doing, around the current prime minister and would make that argument on the basis of security and stability. and that that is what is going to go forward. Because notwithstanding what the others say, it is who has the backing of these metropolitan powers that, that's going to go forward. What we have to be concerned with, however, is something that's been happening in the last 4 years, that the political opposition, who are actually aligned with these quote-unquote gangs that we speak about, they may call the people out in protest and create a new level of instability. But it seems to me more certain that you will not have an election this September, perhaps not this year, and that what you would have is a caretaker government with Prime Minister Joseph at the head of the authority.
You mentioned receiving the backing of, for example, the United States, Canada, etc. What would that look like?
Well, it may be that what they would decide is to constitute a support peacekeeping force, not maybe through the UN, or it may be more than likely under the guise of the UN, but that would put together a support force there, much in the same way as they had in the last several years, that would go there to provide security. Not that the UN had provided very good security for the 10 years or so that they were there, 10 plus years. But I think that's what it's going to look like. And they're going to back the government in financially and militarily and in public. They're going to make it clear that for now, they're back Mr. Joseph. They're going to ask that he create some sort of assembly of unity, bring into it several disparate parties, and to discuss the grounds for a new election. But I think what's going to happen is that it's going to be made absolutely clear by the U.S. government in conjunction with Canada and France that for now, what they are backing is a government of national unity headed by Prime Minister Joseph, and their specific objective would be to prepare the country for elections, whether it's under the current constitution or revised constitution, remains to be seen.
So talk to me about some of the other names that have also been floated as it related to the leadership of Haiti shortly before and shortly after the assassination of Moïse. Ariel Henry, for example, and Joseph Lambert. Who are these two people?
Well, Mr. Henry, of course, Henry Joseph, and
forgive my French, but go right ahead.
Mine is just as bad, believe me. But Henry Joseph and Mr. Moïse, they're all actually peas in the same pod, so to speak. They're the same political party, but there are different interests here and there. The fact of the matter is that even people within Mr. Moïse's own political party that had certain degrees of disgruntlement with him. Remember, a lot of them did not back his call for a referendum on a new constitution. Apparently, Mr. Henry was in his corner. Mr. Joseph, if one had to think, was falling out of grace. If not, he wouldn't have been replaced. But since he finds himself there at this point in time, he is, of course, singing the praises of Mr. Moïse. Now, the Mr. Lambert, the head of the Haitian judiciary, and in the Senate, these are individuals representing different political parties and different political interests, all of whom are making claim to constitutional legitimacy without regard to policies. You see. So, and in regular times, the Well, one might think in regular times.
I was about to say, what by Haitian standards politically, what are regular times?
Well, meaning if you're operating under the 1987 Constitution, if you're going under the 1987 Constitution as presumably the Constitution that's the one that's operative at this point in time, then one would have to take the line of succession as stipulated in the Constitution, which, as we know, would then suggest that the head of the judiciary would become the next president in the case of the position being vacant or vacated. That ran into its own snags with the head of the judiciary having passed away from coronavirus. Mm. And so now the new president of the judiciary is making his own claim to that. He's actually...
Joseph Lambert.
President of the judiciary. Now, at the same time, Mr. Henry is making his claim, and he is saying, well, I was actually nominated. But the problem with this, if you speak in constitutionally, it reminds us a bit in American history of Marbury versus Madison. He may have been nominated to the position, but he had not actually been appointed fully to it. And therefore, his claim is not on as firm ground as anybody else's. It really is not. He makes that claim, but it's not a very solid claim at all.
So,
but you have other actors.
So, let me ask you this. You know, with all of this said, and you did, you know, hypothesize the possibility. Definitely not something that will happen, but the possibility that there could be elections in the fall. Could we see a Joseph Lambert, an Ariel Henry, and even Prime Minister Claude Joseph run, in addition to dozens of others who historically have run for president in mm-hmm. Haiti? Is that a possibility?
Well, what's a clear possibility is that you will see about 25 to 30 candidates, including a candidate who would still emerge as pretty popular, the candidate that would be most likely put up by the old president, Aristide. He has a candidate in his party, Lavalas, is always popular, and she's bound to be in that mix. We have Mr. Celestin, we have another Mr. Moise from two other political parties who actually came second and third in the last election. But Jovenel Moise, he had gotten 50%+ of the vote, whereas Mr. Celestin, he had gotten 20%, and the other Mr. Moise, he got 10%. But those were the top three candidates, and so you should anticipate that these individuals would throw their hat in the ring. And then there are these other senators who were always in opposition, including the same Jean Charles Moïse, including Mr. Latortue, Mr. Michel, and these names that you'll begin to hear more and more, Lambert and Benoit. These are the names you'll begin to hear as top candidates. These are people who have solid factions in the land, in the government, and on the streets, who would all throw themselves, their hats into the ring. They have been in united opposition to Moïse staying in office, but they will not be united once the election is set.
So let me ask you this in the metaphor that you use and in the battle between the two elephants and the trampled grass, because you know much better than I that that trampled grass has turned to dirt over many, many decades. And you talked about the lack of infrastructure, in Haiti, even in, obviously the largest city, Port-au-Prince and the like. So What will it take in the wake of the assassination of Moïse to get Haiti back on some semblance of stable footing?
Well, this, I think, is the single most important question to be asked and answered. The last time Haiti was on, to put it in your term, stable footing, was not a good time, but it was stable. This is the presidency of the Duvaliers from 57 to 86. You couldn't exercise certain liberties, particularly the liberty of free speech and opposition. But it's curiously enough what many individuals in the land, most of whom by now would be, let's say, 50 years old or older, they would say to you that they long for the good old days of the Duvaliers. Why? Why? Because you remember a Haiti that you didn't have these security concerns on the street.
Well, no, and you also, as you know, particularly during the 60s and the 1970s, there was a lot of heavy foreign tourism, cruise ships and flights into Haiti.
All these things.
And there was, if not the political freedoms of which you discuss, but there was, some economic stability and certainly.
What good is political freedom if you can't feel secure in your person walking on
yes.
the street? If you can't
yes.
feed yourself? If you can't send your children to school?
Absolutely.
If you can't get hospitalization? So at the end of the day, okay, what we know is that the assassination of Mr. Moïse is not likely to bring any greater stability to the government or any greater opportunities to the masses. Okay, this, in fact, it may be quite the opposite. What would allow for a persistence of insecurity is that assassination. So who benefits? We don't know. We do know that the masses do not. What is required then? It seems to me that the factional gangs allied with political parties do not allow for stability in the land. It seems to me that those for whom law and order was an interference with their trades, the business class, they may have had a different interest. But what remains then is the continued exploitation of social services and poor infrastructure. And so it seems to me that behind these, the rich, they live behind their high walls and the iron gates, and they can escape to France and Canada with their riches. But the poor are stuck in a Haiti that gives nothing to them. So how do we fix this, and what is the road forward? I think that Haiti's problems must be solved from within Haiti. But a certain degree of external intervention is absolute at this time. Because what we have to do is we have to move away from a Haiti that has been defined for too long as a society in which you have a socialization, of course. Everyone gets together to create wealth, but you have a privatization of that wealth. You have an economic elite that is living a lavish lifestyle, that charge $130 to $300 per month in their hotels that they have in Pétionville and Port-au-Prince, while they pay regular folks $60 to $80 a month. This cannot sustain itself if you're going to get changes in the society. What you need, I think, and I would advocate, is in line with the state of siege, a suspension at this time of regular democratic rules of engagement, and have a 6 to 1 year period of martial existence in which you impose security and build some functioning institutions. It may require, as we've discussed, some sort of a multinational police force to patrol the land.
But that's that, I would say that seems like a high bar, though. You know, right now. I mean, I agree that the Haitians would want to be responsible for Haitians.
But it's not going to happen. The reason it cannot happen is because the fact that you have all these gangs that people talk about, we call them gangs, but they're really extensions of political parties. And none is prepared to either join a real alliance with others for the greater good or to submit themselves to others for the greater good. So you really need to find a way to get a society that thinks of itself as a nation, as opposed to parts and parcels of a nation.
That is a profound point in and of itself, and certainly something for all of us to think about, not only as we look in from the outside, but for, for Haitians here who have family, loved ones still there, as well as those that are there and trying their best to, again, keep that island nation in a stable situation. Dr. Nkongo Ba Nkongo, thank you so much for your thought processes and your knowledge. I appreciate it. I think I learned something today, so I appreciate you talking to us.
Thank you very much.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, July 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.